This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
It is good news. I'm not going to be churlish about this. I'm really pleased that the Chancellor has listened on this particular occasion. But it doesn't go far enough in the sense of timescale. And importantly, you know, still leaves us with challenges for the second half of this financial year for us as a council, and I'm sure councils elsewhere as well.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast. In the week that we find out why some Kent men are dying young, a solar project got the boot, and why Medway Council is never far away from a political scrap. I'm Simon Finlay, local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I'm joined by my usual accomplices, Daniel Essen, who reports on borough and district councils.
Hello.
And Robert Boddy, who is the local democracy reporter for Medway.
Hello.
We'll also be speaking to KM political editor Paul Francis about the week in Westminster, and our very special guest, Medway Council leader Vince Maple, who is approaching his first anniversary in charge of the unitary authority. First up, we're going to talk to Robert about what's happening at Medway Council. What's been going on this week then?
So last week we talked about the suspension of two Labour councillors due to a suspected fight at the Christmas party. Following that, the deputy leader of the Medway Conservatives resigned the whip and now sits as an independent on the grounds that she disagreed with the direction of her group. But the really big, significant development was around Medway Council's precarious financial situation, which we've talked about previously. And it all came to a head with the setting of their annual budget. Listeners will remember that the council's budget was built upon asking central government for exceptional powers to borrow £14.8 million to cover their running costs this year and a further £16.3 million next year. They'd got council finance experts to come in with a plan to avoid a Section 114 order, which is effective bankruptcy, and this was suggested the only credible way that they could balance their books.
Okay, and did they get it?
Yes, but the government didn't half wait around. It was confirmed on the day of the budget meeting, just hours before it was to be debated by the council, that Medway would be allowed these powers. But that doesn't mean that Medway Council's worries are over. The government only allowed the borrowing for this year, so next year they'll have to ask again for permission for this £16.3 million. And of course, they'll have to make sure not to overspend beyond the budget that they've set and prove that they've been using these exceptional powers to good effect.
And what was the reaction across the council to this?
Well, obviously, the Labour group who put forward this as their plan for the budget were massively pleased with this outcome, calling it their roadmap to financial sustainability. Naturally, opposition parties weren't exactly on the same page. The Conservatives said that while they recognised more central government intervention was needed, which is what we've been hearing from councils across the country, they say that Medway hasn't gone far enough to reduce spend, hasn't worked hard enough to really get the organisation as efficient as possible before going out with the begging bowl, their words, not mine. They also take issue with the method of borrowing, saying it's just piling on debt for the future and kicking the can down the road. The Lib Dems, however, are taking issue with some of the cuts that are part of this budget, particularly the free swimming for under-16s and over-60s, which is to be removed. The response from Medway Labour, though, is the same to both charges. What would you do instead? As yet, answers to this are pretty limited.
Interesting. Okay, thanks, Robert. Now moving on to our second tier councils. Dan, what's been happening in the wider world?
So I spent quite some time last week working on a controversial planning application related to a massive solar farm near Faversham, which after quite some hours of debate was controversially rejected by councillors.
Okay, so where is this solar farm and why are the councillors voting on it?
So the solar farm's called Cleve Hill Solar Park. It's pretty much right next to Graveney, which is a small village near Faversham. It's currently under construction and when it's done, it's going to be the UK's biggest solar farm with 880,000 solar panels and over 350 megawatts of energy capacity. Swellborough Council's planning committee was voting on something called the Battery Safety Management Plan, which regulates things like access to water on the site in the event of a fire. fire, access for emergency vehicles, spacing between container units and that sort of thing. Planning permission for the farm itself and other projects like this is given by national government. In this, you know, permission for this one was given in 2020. But for reasons unbeknownst to me, or seemingly to council officers or council members at that, local government rather than national government is responsible for approving very technical and complicated important details on these kinds of projects, like the battery safety management plan.
You said that they rejected the plan. What grounds did they give for that?
So first, it's important to note for context that the development of this solar farm and the battery safety management plan around it has been very controversial since before it was even built. The local MP, Helen Whateley, tried to stop it from happening at all and has continued to back local opposition to it. Council officers, before a planning meeting, they have to come up for a recommendation of which way members of the committee vote. In this case, they recommended that members vote in favour of the battery safety management plan. But many residents had expressed fears for an explosion from the batteries, or, you know, fires, toxic fumes, other sort of, you know, in the event of a catastrophe at this solar farm, which could affect them. There was a protest outside the meeting, and after 4 hours of debate, councillors ended up voting against the plans. That officially their reasons were that there wasn't enough information on emergency procedures, on evacuation plans, water storage and that sort of thing. But council planning officers made very clear to them that those reasons were not legally sound. So the likely end result of this is that Cleeve Hill, the company behind the development or behind the solar farm, are going to take Swellborough Council to the planning inspectorate. And since the decision was in contravention of planning rules, it's quite likely that they'll win, and it will cost Swellborough Council an awful lot of time and money.
Okay, so that's one we'll have to keep an eye on. Okay, thanks very much, Dan.
So, Simon, what's been happening at County Hall in the past 7 days?
Well, the County Council considered a report about life expectancy for people in different parts of Kent. And it appears that if you live in a poor area of Kent, you can die around 7 years earlier than those who might live in an affluent area, for example. And this affects mainly men. Say, if you live in a place like somewhere like Thanet, a man can expect to live 76 years, whereas someone in a more affluent area can expect to live 83. So Kent County Council's Health Reform and Public Health Cabinet Committee considered a report dealing the risks to the county from all of this.
So what are the driving factors in this?
Well, essentially, it's unhealthy lifestyles, poor diet, lack of exercise, smoking, excess drinking. But the report also highlights that the continued squeeze on public health funding will only contribute even further to those risk factors. I mean, the full risk register, as it's called, says that the life expectancy in the most deprived areas in Kent is 76 years for men and 80 years for women, compared to 83 and 86 years respectively in the most affluent areas. These inequalities will lead to rising health and social care costs for the council and its partners amongst those groups least able to support themselves financially. That's what the report said.
So the differences in life expectancy there are pretty stark. What did members of the council from across Kent have to say about it?
It wasn't really debated to any great degree, but afterwards Barry Lewis, who's a member of KCC for Margate, said that he wasn't shocked in the least by these findings. He said that when people's budgets are tight, they will be forced to eat cheap, unhealthy foods, and premature deaths are always linked to places where deprivation is at its highest. But having said that, the NHS in Thanet is not fit for purpose, said Councillor Lewis, and the government and the prevention message is not getting through. He also said there's a big problem with early diagnosis because of the trouble of getting GP appointments in that area. So anyway, on that cheery note, that wraps up what's been happening across Kent and Medway. Thanks to Dan and Robert for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we're speaking to Paul Francis, our political editor, about events in Westminster. It was the budget this week. Anything to remark upon, Paul?
Well, the thing to remark upon is the fact that it was all pretty dull. And in fact, a lot of the pre-briefing of the contents of the budget were what we got and what nothing more. Now, a lot of people had been speculating that the budget would be the launch pad for a general election campaign. Now, I have to say, I'm not convinced myself at all on the back of Jeremy Hunt's programme for the economy and jobs.
There was some sort of thinking that if there was a bit of a poll bounce off the back of the 2p tax cut, that it would bring forward the election till May rather than sort of take the chance of having it in the autumn time after a summer of small boats and all the various other crises which may befall the Tories between now and then.
Yeah, all completely right. You know, there are a lot of issues which might get worse before they get better in terms of government policy, particularly on the small boats issue. But as I said, it didn't. It was all a bit underwhelming, if you want my honest opinion. And there had been some pre-briefing that local councils were going to get clobbered by the Chancellor. There was nothing really specific about that, and drew a fairly short response from the local government information unit, who said what was needed was long-term reform rather than just a band-aid approach to the problems facing councils. Now, if I tell you that Jeremy Hunt talked about a landmark public sector productivity plan, you'll get the get a sense of how dry it all was.
Yeah, very snappy, yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's a message you're going to be able to sell on the doorstep, do you?
Well, not really, no. I mean, local government is never great on the national stage anyway, but people are becoming a bit more aware of what's going on because the national picture, we've got a little bit more sort of detail what's happening up in Birmingham, for example. They've got to find £300 million worth of cuts. And these things are starting to hit home, especially if you're a resident there, you're going to be faced with a 20% increase in your council tax.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, one small item that did catch my attention in the budget was the announcement that the Household Support Plan, which is a funding scheme available to those who are really struggling with their bills and outgoings, would be extended for a six-month period. Around about 100 council leaders, 9 in Kent, signed a joint letter pleading with the Chancellor to make sure that this didn't end at the time it was supposed to. That's the end of March, and he's agreed that it should be continued for a further 6 months. Of course, we don't know what happens at the end of that 6 months.
So, Paul, I mean, as we've discussed, it's not a very inspiring budget. I mean, just to get inside the head of Jeremy Hunt for a moment, I mean, why do you think he's gone this sort of route? I mean, we know there's a general election coming this year, but this isn't particularly exciting or going to move the dial massively. So why has he done it?
Well, he's done it because he had to do it in one sense. But you're right that I don't think it's going to move the dials at all, particularly for the Conservative Party. I think he found that he didn't have as much political headroom, as they call it, to make some more radical, bold promises as he thought he might have. And that's possibly why it came across as fairly low-key. And, you know, normally chancellors wait until the last minute to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Well, if there was a rabbit, it was dead in the hat.
Okay, Paul, listen, thank you very much indeed for your time today, and I look forward to hearing from you again next week.
Thank you, Simon.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
After 16 years in opposition, Vince Maple overnight became leader of Medway Council. Now nearly a year on, is Medway's future safe in Labour hands? Well, Vince is here to tell Robert and I about it right now. Vince, nice for you to come along. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Just for our listeners, can you just tell us what your route was into politics?
Well, thanks very much. And thanks for inviting me on. It's great that the political podcast for Kent is doing such good work, and I've got to my turn on the list, so I'm grateful to be here. The first time I ever stood for election was when I was 9 years old. Giving my age away, that was during the 1987 election. So, of course, like lots of schools, and we might see this at some point this year, lots of schools, when there's a general election, will run elections in their community and in their classes. So at 9 years old, I stood for the Labour Party, thank goodness. And I had one policy. So I went to Luton Junior School. Many listeners will know that that's on Luton Road, so a busy road. So back in 1987, I was saying there are too many cars on the road and not enough buses, and, you know, some nearly 40 years on now, I'm still saying the same. So local government politics can be slow in its movement. I then joined the Labour Party at the Central Hall, as it was then, now the Central Theatre, when in 1995 there was the Rolling Rose Roadshow, and actually really inspirational speeches from both John Prescott and actually John Shaw, not to be confused with Jonathan Shaw, the former Chatham and Aylesford MP, but John Shaw, the former Rochester upon Medway council leader, and actually first stood for election back in 2007. So my route into the Labour Party was obviously joining at that point, but importantly, I've always in workplaces been a trade union rep. That became my job at one point as well. So there's a kind of natural progression from helping people in the workplace to helping people in the community. So that's how I kind of fell into local government politics, first getting elected in 2007.
And I mean, as you say, you were elected for the first time in 2007, and then finally in 2023, you became the leader of Medway Council. That's a long time to be sitting in opposition. I mean, what was it actually like, sort of on a personal level, after all that time, you know, basically arguing from the sidelines that things should be different, to finally be in the driving seat? I mean, did you get a sense of pressure that you hadn't expected?
It was genuinely the kind of mixture of emotions over the last nearly 12 months now. We're now in March, so 10 months basically, has been everything from utter elation, including on the election night. I think, sadly, me running around a sports hall became a bit of a thing. But that was kind of a climax of an incredible night. Absolute high elation. And I'd say a close second to that actually was when we heard about the Ofsted inspection. Really incredibly powerful partnership approach to saying children matter in Medway, not my words, but the words of Ofsted. And there's been utter lows as well. I mean, I think, as is well documented, we heard about the proposal for the £170 million worth of infrastructure funding being withdrawn on effectively day one of the Labour administration. I don't get angry very often. It's not really my style. I was pretty annoyed through elements of that process because actually, not for me personally or not even for my administration, but actually for the people of Medway, who time and again say, look, we're not against having new houses here. You know, that's important. People need homes, but we need the infrastructure to go with it. So, yeah, a whole gamut of probably every emotion since May the 4th, a level of relief after, as we're recording this last Thursday with the budget meeting. Of course, we may talk about that, I'm sure. But yeah, every emotion, it's been, without using every political cliche, it has been an emotional roller coaster, and that's just kind of 10 months in. There's a lot more of that to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, with the benefit of hindsight and looking back over the months since the May 2023 election, are there things that you would do differently, or do you think you got it just about right?
Look, I'm sure as you go through these things, you look back and go, oh, we could have done that differently. We could have done that in a different way. I look back and go, actually, I think we have done a good job. Are there moments that could have been done differently? Are there things that could have been communicated in a different way? Possibly. But I think, look, it's one of those things where you're almost learning every day as well. So look, one of the things I said before the election is that in a four-year term, we will make mistakes. We're honest. We're human. We'll make mistakes. And I will accept those entirely. And sometimes those mistakes won't necessarily be of your making. So a good example of that is where we had some struggles over the Christmas period with some of our waste collection. Now, people starting up hashtags of Medway bin crisis and all the rest of it. Well, lots of councils struggle over the Christmas period with that. But it was, you know, it wasn't where it should have been. So absolutely accept that we have responsibility for that. In that case, our partner Veolia has some responsibility as well. And we learn from that to make sure that actually next Christmas, we get to a position where that's not the case.
I mean, there obviously is a difference between being in opposition and then taking on the role as the administration. I mean, have you found that you've had to sort of adapt some of the maybe the words idealistic views that you held in opposition? I mean, take for example Chatham Docks, which obviously you were a major part of sort of supporting the Save Chatham Docks campaign. Now you're in the position where what you say as the council leader really matters. I mean, how has your position on that changed, if it has changed? And is that because you're now responsible for what the council does?
Look, I think it's, you know, easy to say lots of things in opposition. And actually, I think my political opponents, some of those are struggling a bit with that as well, actually. It's hard to transition from opposition to power. It's equally difficult to transition from power to opposition. I think some of my political opponents have done that better than others. And I think as a whole, our team have transferred to that new role pretty well. Of course, in one case, Tracy Coombs, our brilliant portfolio holder for education, she went from being a candidate to being a cabinet member. So everyone's got a slightly different journey. On the specific you raised, Robert, around Chatham Docks, I've said a couple of things. Firstly, I want to retain those jobs. They're important jobs. Secondly, I want to make sure we deliver a local plan. We know that an inspector, if we didn't include Chatham Docks, and interestingly, as we're recording this today again, Rishi Sunak earlier today spoke about brownfield first for development. And of course, technically, Medway Docks is a brownfield site. under planning kind of description. So the thing I said very, very clearly was I wanted to get both parties into the room to actually have a genuine conversation and see what the art of the achievable is. Is there an option that both ArcelorMittal and Peel as the two organisations can find a way forward which allows both a level of development but also retention of those jobs? And I was pleased, it could have been a case that one side or the other said, no, we're not coming to that. Both sides engaged positively. I think it was a positive, constructive meeting. And actually, both sides agreed to have further conversations outside of that collective meeting. I've written to both to get an update, and I'm looking forward to hearing how those conversations are going. For me, it's about the art of the achievable. Compare that to the previous administration, who just ignored letters for a year and a half. That's not responsible leadership. So it is a challenge, and that's where we are. I was pleased we got everybody in the room, and I want to see how those conversations between the two parties progress. But ultimately, I have got a responsibility to deliver that local plan, not least actually because Michael Gove, again, without any forewarning, criticised Medway Council for not having delivered a local plan for more than 20 years.
You signed a letter along with 176 other local government leaders via the Local Government Association asking Jeremy Hunt to extend the Household Support Fund. He has listened. What do you think of that then?
Well, that's a really great question. And look, from my perspective, this is something which I know affects not just Medway, but across the county. Nine council leaders of all political persuasions across the county signed this, myself, Roger Goff, and many others, I say, from all parties and none. It's worth saying as well, in Medway, of course, we had the cross-party motion that was supported unanimously, moved by my colleague, Councillor Tracy Coombs. So, of course, I welcome any extension, but the reality is extending it effectively less than a month before it's due to finish, and indeed only extending it for 6 months, does in itself pose further questions. So I hope to see the government, whoever the government are over the next 6 months, working towards a plan of a sustainable approach to this. Household Support Fund has now come into a space which there were problems long before COVID, of course. So things like school holiday hunger is a real and genuine issue. And we've been able here in Medway and elsewhere in the county and the country to be able to tackle some of those issues with this funding. If this ceases to be, the Household Support Fund may not be there, but the school holiday hunger will be. And with the backdrop that we've got here in Medway with our 91% cut in our revenue support grant, absolutely, I recognise that that will mean that probably we wouldn't be able to continue that support, however much we would want to, because the finances simply wouldn't be there. So it is good news. I'm not going to be churlish about this. I'm really pleased that the Chancellor has listened on this particular occasion, but it doesn't go far enough in the sense of timescale. And importantly, still leaves us with challenges for the second half of this financial year for us as a council, and I'm sure councils elsewhere as well.
Following up from that, I mean, we're seeing across the country, sort of as you've referenced there, that the many councils are saying to the government that they're underfunded, they can't afford vital services, particularly those upper tier authority services like social care and such. We're seeing bankruptcy notices and even well-run councils are really facing significant pressures. I mean, I suppose we talk a lot about what the councils are facing, but after the budget today, Jeremy Hunt hasn't revolutionised or thrown something really brand new to help councils in the ring. So my question is, why do you think that the government isn't doing more for local councils when they provide so many services for local people?
I think, again, that's a really good question, and one which, regrettably, we didn't get the answer from the Chancellor earlier today in the budget. Look, from my perspective, I think it's particularly with Medway. So Medway is a unitary authority. We do everything that the council does, but of course, for the rest of the Kent, you've got those two-tier approaches. I think actually during COVID, people realised perhaps just how much the council was there for communities like Medway and others at that really difficult time. So if anything, the value of the support from local councils, I think, is genuinely recognised by the community. So it is really disappointing that, yeah, we as one of 19 councils had to go to, in that case, Michael Gove, to say, can we have flexibility? No extra money, but extra flexibility. For me, I think there's three things that I would want to see from the future government. One is around funding based on need. We need a frankly, a sea change when it comes to that. I think there's some specific recognition of having a multi-year settlement. So at the moment, this is a sixth year where we've had a single year settlement. It's really challenging to be able to plan for a medium-term financial strategy for an organization like Medway Council if you only know what your funding is for the next 12 months. And then I think there are some specific challenges. Put those two bits there as kind of front and center. People often talk about the four ultra challenges, if you want to call them that. So absolutely, adult social care, children's services, SEND, and actually temporary accommodation and housing. Of course, three of those four are for upper tier authorities. One of those four is predominantly for lower tier authorities. As a unitary, we've got to deal with all four of those. So again, I think some specific challenge and support around those areas is desperately needed. But fundamentally, we've got to get to a point where council's funding is based on need and is distributed on a multi-year settlement approach.
You sort of touched on it there, and the polls are definitely pointing towards a Labour victory at the next general election. The only difference seems to be the actual sort of scale of that victory. What Keir Starmer will inherit, should he win, is going to be one mighty mess to try and clear up in local government. What sort of timescale do you think he's going to need to put it right?
Well, we'll see some things happen in the first 100 days. We'll have the Take Back Control Act come forward. And for me, that's about additional powers, not just for me as a council leader, but actually for the communities of Medway. You know, genuine empowerment, genuine devolution, not just moving it from Whitehall to Town Hall, but actually getting it out into our communities. I think there's a separate conversation for us in Kent around devolution. Well documented that, again, I'm not principally opposed to devolution. Do I want more powers and resources for the 1.8 million people of Kent and Medway? Absolutely, I do. But I don't think that should come with an elected mayor. And I think we would have a better hearing around a more bespoke approach, which I hope Roger Gough and others across the county would be supportive of. I don't think anyone is principally opposed to more resources coming to Medway and Kent, but we need to have the right governance structures. And again, the binary choice from the current government makes that more difficult. But I absolutely recognise that this incoming Labour government, which I'm working hard for, and is not in the bag. There are a number of examples across the world where if you look at polling can change very, very quickly. So I don't presume there will be a Labour government. I'll be working hard for it every single day. In Medway, we've got two brilliant candidates for Gillingham and Rainham and Rochester and Strooge, both of whom happen to be in my cabinet and are doing great work that they have done since May the 4th, but actually we've got to make sure that we get those two individuals in Nashaba and Lauren, along with others across the county elected. That's not a given. And to use one of the ultimate political cliches, there is only one poll that counts, and that's when people go to the poll whenever that general election is called.
You've referenced there that Medway has two Labour candidates, Nashaba Khan and Lauren Edwards. There is a third Medway seat, which is Chatham and Aylesford, of course, a seat which previously you've stood for. I mean, are you considering putting your name forward for that? I know you've just become Medway Council leader, but, you know, is that something that's on your mind?
Well, Robert, I think you've almost answered your own question then. And this isn't an exclusive for the Kent Politics podcast, but I don't think I've said it on broadcast media anywhere, so you can take that as a broadcast exclusive. Look, I said, and actually my brilliant deputy leader, Teresa Murray, we both said, if we're lucky enough to give the opportunity to serve the people of Medway as council leader and deputy leader, we will not put ourselves forward for parliamentary seats. There's a number of very talented people in the Labour Party who will fill not just the vacancy in Chatham and Aylesford, but elsewhere as well. And I'll be kept because I live in Chatham and Aylesford. Of course, I'll be voting for whoever that candidate is. I'll want them to succeed. Look, I'll place on record here, because I haven't done this particularly elsewhere as well, that I think Chatham and Aylesford, since it had been here as a constituency, has had two very respected MPs, both in Tracy Crouch and prior to that, Jonathan Shaw. So look, whoever takes on that mantle, and I hope it's whoever the Labour Party selects as their candidate, they've got some big shoes to fill with two previous MPs, both of whom actually had that kind of respect from across the political spectrum. And And I hope the third MP for that constituency, whoever it ends up being, is of a similar vein.
Okay. Well, one final question before we go. There was a bit of a bust up at a Christmas party, I believe, between two of your councillors. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened at that?
I can't. And listeners will know I try and be as open and transparent as possible about everything. That's my approach in life, and that's my approach generally. I would be breaking the rules of the Labour Party if I said anything about that process. So as chair of the South East Regional Board, I don't think it's very good if I break the rules of the Labour Party. Therefore, with respect, and I completely understand why you would ask me that question, I'm not able to comment.
All right. Okay, fair enough. Worth a try, wasn't it? Okay, Vince May, well, many thanks for your time today, and we wish you all the very, very best for the future.
Thanks for having me on.
All the best. Thanks to everyone for joining me on this week's podcast. We'll be back next week. Don't forget to tune in to KMTV at 5 p.m. for their politics show. All the best now.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show with Rob Bailey on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.